The following program may contain music-related fun and laughs for all ages. Listening is advised. Wake up, world. It's time for Big JD and Lippo in the morning. And here they are, your hosts, Big JD and Lippo.
That's right, we're your host.
I'm Lippo.
And I'm Big JD.
How you doing today, Big JD?
Doing okay?
That's hanging good. You're hanging in there.
Latency.
You like it,
don't
you?
Back it off a little.
Back off the latency in your cans.
Yeah.
I'm just getting used to it.
Are you?
It's the way I hear everything.
Yeah, I get rid of it completely. It's just at the quick click of a button. Are you still there, though?
Yeah. No, I'm not there.
No? You're turning up.
I am gone. There I am.
There you go.
Okay. I'm dry.
Oh.
How dry?
Let's get you wet.
Let's get me wet. Just touch me right here. That's
whoa, whoa,
it.
Whoa. Oh. On your back of your hand?
The back of my hand. I'll give you the back of my hand.
My grandfather always used to say, you want one of these? And he'd shake his fist at you. He was super big, too. Like 7 feet tall.
He would actually never hit you with one of those.
No. Nope.
But he would threaten you.
He fought a lot back in the day.
With a smile on his face.
Yeah.
Well, that's
we were just
cool.
Kids. Little kids. He died when we were young.
I never had a grandfather.
What do you mean? They all passed away before you were like...
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Before you were born?
Before I was born, yeah.
Wow. No grandparent.
No grandfather.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two grandmothers?
Yeah, I saw both my grandmothers.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. I was very young when my mom's mom passed away, but I got to hang out with my dad's mother, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a cool lady, for sure.
Until you were how old?
20-ish.
Okay.
1988, she died. Yet. I remember that only because she was born in 1900, and I know she was 88 when she died.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Smoked a pack of Moors. Oh, pack of Moors. She chain-smoked Moors.
Yeah.
Remember those cigarettes?
And lived to be how old?
88.
88, yeah. Wow. That's funny. So cigarettes will kill people early, and some people will live forever.
Yeah.
It's all in your makeup.
She did. She did die of complications of her lungs. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a long time after, a lot of...
Smoking.
People can't... Yeah. I mean, a lot of people died younger than that from smoking.
Right, for
or
sure.
Or gotten all kinds of different cancers.
Yeah. I know she... When they were growing up, my dad would tell me stories of people just coming over to they had a cottage in Belle River, which ended up being her house at some point. Hmm. And they'd have parties like that would last all weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Like there'd be people up all the time.
Your grandmother was a partier?
Apparently she was a partier, yeah. Yeah, it's funny how that all comes about. But
Yeah.
Because my dad went to preschool, went to a seminary, and was a philosophy teacher, never partied. He drank beer occasionally, but he was not a partier. Whereas my grandmother, woot woot.
And that's his mother, right, you said?
Yeah, my dad's mom, yeah. And his dad was a vet of the First World War, and he died shortly after he came back of injuries that he got while he was in the war, yeah. So maybe that's what drove her to drinking. I don't know.
That or the Hot Rod Lincoln.
The Hot Rod Lincoln, yeah.
Were you talking about the Hot Rod Lincoln a little earlier?
Yes, we were.
Pre-show?
Yeah. So I was going to ask you what's going on, but everybody knows what's going on. You did this interview with the South Detroit Soundhouse with Scott Weiland in the middle of last month. Well, I don't know when you actually did it. Probably the beginning of November, I'm going to guess. But it was...
It was November 14th we did the interview, actually.
Oh,
his performance at the Hard Rock in Detroit. And pre-show, we did an interview with him. And I sit-down interview, 20 minutes long, hosted by Randy Falsetta and the show that I produce, South Detroit Soundhouse. SouthDetroitSoundhouse.com. Actually, you can go check out the interview, but it gained a lot of attention because he passed away just maybe 3 weeks after we did the interview.
Right.
Which we initially thought it was the last interview with him, but we came to find out that it's one of the last three interviews, really, video interviews.
Yeah, he was doing, obviously, everybody's going to, I shouldn't say everybody's going to ask him, but there's going to be people who, when he comes into your town, there's going to be people who are going to clamor around and see if they can sit down and talk to him, right?
Well, sure. That's and his the celebrity status,
were,
right?
So. Yeah, and his people were okay with that. Whereas I know a lot, you told me a lot of people, they're just the publicist or their people just say, no, that we're not, we don't do sit down interviews.
Yeah, his people were pretty cool with it. And we do find that a lot, though, that a lot of people lot don't want to do day of interviews. But that's usually the only time they're here is day of.
Right.
So day of interviews for voice, for, you know, vocal reasons, and a lot of times because of schedule.
So you don't think it has anything to do with they're afraid of the questions you're going to ask them, or they want to get pre-screened as far as the questions you
No, not at all. It's never got anything to do with that.
No. Okay.
Not that I've found. We haven't found that. I mean, it's always the voice or just time. But we are actually adding something new to South Detroit Soundhouse, and we've never said this publicly or anything, but we're going to put together a, like sort of another division of it, South Detroit Soundcheck.
Okay.
So we're going to start doing interviews at Soundcheck. So anybody that doesn't necessarily have time, hopefully they'll be interested in just doing a quick interview at Soundcheck where we don't have to sit down, we don't have to set up lights, we don't have to, you know what I mean? Just a handheld microphone, we can get in a few quick questions and still be able to talk to the artists. We think that'll be a little bit better. And we find, I mean, that's generally what the like news media does. They'll go in and talk at Soundcheck and just get a few questions in or something like that. So we're going to try doing something like that and offer that as a secondary, you know, if they don't have time, can we do this?
Okay.
So we're going to try that.
So what about the voice thing though? So you feel like they're working on their voices a little bit during Soundcheck. They're kind of warming up and it's okay to talk.
There may still be some that say they just won't do it or because of the brevity of it, maybe, you know, we just want to ask a couple questions. And you know what I mean? That their mindset will be like, just a couple questions. Okay, yeah, we can do that. And then we'll try and keep them for half an hour if we can.
Right. And for some people who don't realize, as far as voice goes, like if you're on tour and you're touring around, you wouldn't think that just talking to somebody is going to actually hurt your voice. But actually, that's probably the worst thing a singer can do, especially when they're in a heavy regimen of singing, you know, every day or every other day. I think a lot of people just think talking, well, that's easy, you know, but actually talking is probably one of the hardest things to do, or it's one of the worst things to do for a singing voice.
And the thing to realize, quite honestly, about that is the fact that it might be all right to do one, but these people are traveling from town to town to town, and everybody wants to talk to them.
Right.
So that's, you know, probably the biggest part of the problem is that you can't talk to everybody. So maybe they pick and choose some bigger things. Maybe they'll go on radio sometimes, you know, like you find that sometimes, you know, in the morning, they'll be on the morning show and then they're playing that night, which is, you know, a little further away from their show maybe too. Yeah. But yeah, just too much talking is probably not a good thing. So.
Right.
Got some news for us?
I just ran into a little piece of a tidbit of an interesting fact that Robert Plant once stagehand for Def Leppard during their Hysteria tour. I know. It's crazy, eh?
During how'd that happen?
Well, the deal was that when they were doing that tour, they would come out of the stage, so they had to get underneath the stage. Mm-hmm. In between acts, and they had Queensryche opening for him during one of these legs.
Okay.
And what they had to do was get inside of the boxes that they would usually carry stage equipment and normally guitars or something like that. So a couple guys would get into a guitar crate and a couple more guys would get in. So they'd push these crates underneath the stage and then they'd get out and then they would come up through the stage. It was like a crazy entrance they would have. So Robert Plant was at their show in Chicago. And he thought it was fun and whatever, so he wanted to get in on the act. So he was one of the dudes that was pushing the band underneath the stage during the Def Leppard show. I thought that was a interesting little thing. So he had to, whatever, put coveralls on or just look like a regular dude.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Ozzy has explained why Black Sabbath are apparently not doing a final album. Because he feels, possibly Black Sabbath feels that people don't want new music from Black Sabbath. I don't really get that. How can people not want new music from Black Sabbath? They want to go out with a bigger bang on tour and playing. which I don't find makes a lot of sense.
So they, of course, wanna, we want you new. They don't want to tour in support of a new album. They just want to tour and play all.
Well, I think it's also part of the reason for doing a new album is that because they are on tour, doing a new album will take longer.
Oh, there's that too.
So it gets stretched out longer. He said it would be like a few years in the making.
Right, and someone could die in that period of time.
True. I could always fill in.
I'm kind of, my tongue is in my cheek there, but in reality, someone could die, I suppose, during that period. And you know, their last studio album, I thought was awesome.
It was great.
So
yeah, absolutely. I wish they'd do another one. If that's
the last studio album they ever do, I think they left it left on a good note.
I bet they have a lot of demo stuff and everything that was. They must have things that were unreleased throughout their career.
Absolutely. You know it's going to get released at some point.
Yeah. Well, I hope they do anyway. I mean, with the length of career that they've had, you would think they would by now maybe have released anything that they did have.
No, I think it's a lot of work to get that stuff ready for the studio, and just based on the whole thing that Jimmy Page did with the Led Zeppelin catalog and the amount of work that he said that went into. He said it was like years and years. He's been dying to get out on the road or make new music or whatever, but he wanted to make sure that he got this done, went through all the old stuff, and got that stuff. I just think it's a lot of work, and there's got to be a lot of buy-offs on it, right? Everybody's got to say that's okay. And
true, you know,
so
ownerships and...
Yeah, so all that's got to get worked out. I just think it's a lot of work, and it's, you know, it's an undertaking that has to get done at some point, you know. So I honestly think that is going to happen, but it's not going to happen until the need actually arises.
The Extreme Heavy Blues of Jeffrey David's Blues Connection welcomes you to an unplugged but in-your-face acoustic session live at the DH, the Dominion House 3140 Sandwich in Windsor, January 1st at 9 p.m. as part of the Psycho Hard Metal Show, including guests Antioch. If you haven't seen Jeffrey David's Blues Connection in an unplugged setting, you're in for a treat as JD and Uncle Joey perform acoustic versions of the recent single releases Killing Floor and Long Cold Lonely Winter, along with other new songs from the upcoming Blues My Way CD, as well renditions of great blues giants such as Willie Dixon, Howlin' Wolf, and B.B. King. Friday, January 1st, 2016, 9 p.m. at the DH 3140 Sandwich in Windsor. You don't want to miss it.
We'll be right back.
And we're back.
And what's the show topic on today?
Well, it's about that city right across the river. I'm lucky enough to be at a studio where the river is right in front of me. I can actually see it.
B-Town.
Well, it's called Motown. That's the name of the nickname of the city is Motown, and that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about that Motown sound.
And how did it get the nickname Motown?
How did the city get the name Motown?
Right.
Well, it's
the Motor City.
The Motor City is because everybody associates it with the place where they build cars. Mm-hmm. And what's in cars? Motors.
Right.
So it's Motown, and that's pretty much the reason why Berry Gordy ended up calling his record label that. Like it was kind of like a name that was just out there, but he called the record company Motown because it was based out of Detroit. And actually, he had a record company called Tamla, was the name of the record company. That's what he started. That was the first company he started as a record company. Because Berry Gordy, who was the founder of the company, he was a songwriter. And he realized at a pretty young age that the way to get money, because he had a hit with something, I forget what it was, but he realized the way to really... make money in the music industry was
Lonely Teardrops. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Maybe. I don't remember the name of the song, but it was big, and he didn't make much money off of it. And he found out where the money went, and he realized, okay, I got to get into producing records and publishing rights.
So that's one of those things where you could say, like we were talking about this last week, something about the reasons behind why people do things, and is it good or bad reasons, but. So, in essence, kind of doing it for the money, right? Like, oh, that's where all the money is. That's why I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. So, is it like, you know, true to heart that it's just about the music or about the money kind of thing? There was something on last week's show we were talking about. Remember that? I don't remember what it was exactly, but So, I mean, you could spin things kind of any way you want, but it just, I don't know, popped up in my mind again because we had talked about something like that. But obviously a music lover.
Yeah, so he wrote music for Jackie Wilson and the Matadors, which turned into the Miracles eventually once they were
recorded. With Smokey Robinson?
No, it was with Jackie Wilson.
Okay. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
Right, no, but the Jackie Wilson was with them with the Matadors, but the Matadors changed their name to the Miracles, and I believe Smokey was one of the Matadors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so when it was the Miracles.
I'm so not, it just so Jackie changed Wilson, hands I kind think, of
went on his own.
Yeah.
And then I think they just liked the name Smokey. Oh, I don't know. Maybe the Miracles.
Jackie were, was the brother of Ann and Nancy, wasn't he?
He was their dad. He's old enough to be their dad for sure. So, Gordy's whole family was involved with making music and recording and all that kind of stuff. And
do we know the reason behind the names Tamla, or is that somebody's name? Or
Tammy and something
Anna else. Anna Records, which is Billy Davis and Berry Gordy's sister, Gwen and Anna started Anna Records.
Right.
Which was, yeah.
So Tamla is names. The same kind of thing. It's two names that are together, Tammy and something else. I don't know. Not mm-hmm. sure. So you're in the same neck of the woods as I am. So Gordy originally wanted to name it Tammy Records mm-hmm. after the hit song. Oh, it was from the hit song, Debbie Reynolds, from the film Tammy and the Bachelor.
Oh.
But that name was already taken, so he used Tamla. I'm not sure where the law comes from in Tamla. But his first act was the Matadors, who immediately changed their name to the Miracles. And their first release, Got a Job, was the answer record to the Silhouettes' Get a Job. So they did that a lot, I know, noticed back in the day. There was a theme around popular music.
Mm-hmm. And
they would everybody would play off that theme, whether it was a Postman, whether it was the Twist, mm-hmm, whether mm-hmm. it was a Job, or you know, so everybody was hip on a certain theme, and so they a lot of people wrote songs specifically around what the happening theme was or what was a hit before. Let's play off that, maybe we can get another hit off it, kind of thing.
And speaking of theme,
yeah,
we're playing Motown related songs,
obviously,
this week.
And I'm playing nothing but Motown songs. JD's taking the cover route of this is the original. This is Barrett Strong. This is the first song that became a hit on Motown Records.
I fail to remember sometimes how many cover songs the Beatles kind of made you know, pretty famous too.
Oh yeah, for sure. They did a lot of covers back in the day. So yeah, that was Barrett Strong, which was the very first hit that came out of Motown Records, and it was covered many times by many people.
Coming to you from the Windsor, Detroit area and podcast worldwide, you're listening to Big JD and Lippo in the Morning.
That's an interesting, and we're back.
JD, it was loud, wasn't it? Kind of loud.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Those are, obviously, those are hot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our stingers are hot. Stingers. Hot stingers. Yeah. These stingers should be hot. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know when I grew up. I know when I grew up, but I know about when you grew up. Like that stuff was on the radio all the time. Motown songs when I was growing up in Detroit.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I remember, you know, all these Motown.
Yeah, very popular stuff.
Smokey and the Supremes.
Especially here. I mean, this was the place.
This was the place, yeah. So those tunes were...
And I think over here in Windsor, they were, you know, really pumping out that stuff too, right? In our local radio stations, the AM800 was a big deal for Motown.
I don't know. Was AM800 around in the early 60s?
I don't know how early, but... Let's listen to another tune. This is from you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
This is Mr. Postman. This was the first song by a female group that became a hit. This is the Marvelettes playing Please Mr. Postman. That's another song that was covered many times, pretty famously by the Carpenters. They did a version of that, and I think that might
Postman?
I think so, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm positive now that I think about it, yeah. It was back in the 70s they recorded it, and it was big, and you know, I was digging it. I didn't know that it was covered. I didn't know a lot of songs were covers. I didn't know that people covered other people's songs, let alone, you know, that such a thing existed, and if they did cover it, why would it be on a radio? I'd rather listen to the original, you think, right?
Well, the other way around, too, Motown covered a lot of other songs as well. I have a couple CDs. One is all Beatles songs covered by Motown artists, and I have another one that's Motown Sings Sinatra. So all Sinatra tunes by Motown artists.
Right.
Cool stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, actually. Motown does everything. So Motown had its own thing, like, you know, that it was like a crazy setup, I think, in so much they had this, I would say, a stable of artists that they were either touring or recording. Supposedly, the studio over here on whatever, Grand Boulevard, it was open 22 hours a day. So they were doing stuff in there 22 hours a day, 7 days a week. And
what was the point of closing for 2 hours?
Yeah, really? I know. I don't get that either. Maybe it was
coffee break
between 4 and 6 in the morning. I have no idea.
It'd be sweet if you could just like live in a house studio there and record day and night, like whenever. Just get up and record again, and you know
that was your job.
Musicians always there.
The talent had to be there too, and I think they once the ball started rolling, I think it probably brought in more talent. And of course, Berry Gordy was he's somewhat of a genius as far as picking out what he knew was going to be the sound. And another thing I'd like to talk about some point in the show is the dudes who actually made the Motown sound.
Well, there's a core group there, right? That
the Funk Brothers.
Yeah,
it was the name they were given, which is that was really the Motown sound. And those were a bunch of dudes who they had their stuff going on. And obviously, if the place was open 22 hours, that's all they did. Like they lived and breathed music, and they were in there pumping out the hits. And, you know, when you think of artists today, well, I shouldn't even say artists today, but a lot of artists, when they're making music, you never think of the musicians behind them. But a big reason that all those, Miracles and Temptations and Supreme songs sound the way they do is because of the Funk Brothers were the musicians behind that. I mean, they incorporate a lot of different musical tricks or techniques or, just stuff that they throw into songs. But for the most part, the core sound was always there. There was always, James Jamison on the bass, and which was a big part of it. And it gave it that sound. Of course, there's other factors, the room and the board and all that kind of stuff that's always going to, have that sort of attractiveness to it. But those dudes really knew what they were doing, and they had a role going with it. And it was a very unique situation where they would have all these artists just come in, like, Smokey and the Miracles are coming in, they're recording, and then they'd move out, and okay, now you guys are on the road, the Temptations are coming in, and like, it was just constant, like, you just move these guys in, record some songs, get them on the radio, and then you go out on tour.
And what's interesting about that at that time, probably, is that there wasn't the realization like there is now. When you think back of, the Temptations walk out, and here comes in the Supremes, and they leave, and here comes so-and-so, Marvin Gaye, or whoever,
yeah, exactly.
And you look back and think about that now, well, they had no idea, really, what that was going to become later on, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it was pretty happening at the time.
It was just happening.
But still, it's, not like what we realized Motown to be later.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So what we got here on tap as a JD pick?
An old Motown tune, Dancing in the Streets. Dancing in the Street, I should say. And Van Halen.
Summer's here in the time of trial, or dancing in the
And here we are again.
Talking about Motown here on Big JD and Lippo in the morning. I don't know about you. Were you a fan of Motown?
I was always a fan of Motown, sure.
And yeah. Did you have like their records, or did you just listen to them on the radio, or you just knew
those good tunes? I had, you know, records back in the day, Motown stuff, you know what I mean? But I have, then I had Motown CDs, including the Beatles and Sinatra cover thing. I think I got from Columbia House years ago.
Columbia House,
there's and, a
relic from the past.
Yeah, and I have a number of, you know, like Motown Greatest Hits stuff, like five CD sets and things like that, that kind of just encompass all a lot of stuff from Motown. And
so the covers that we're hearing today, these are just tunes that you knew were good Motown hits?
Oh, songs by others, though, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And this one's no exception. Stop in the Name of Love. And this is Talis, Billy Sheehan. Wow. Talis, Stop in the Name of Love. Stop. Billy likes to crank his bass up, that's for sure.
Yeah, he was kind of like...
It's always too loud.
Always too loud. Well, he's definitely got like a lead bass tone going.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy.
So who's on vocals in that?
I cannot remember the guy's name. Talis was a pretty cool band, though. They were pretty good.
Well, it was all MIT graduates, weren't they? Like wicked
bass everybody players. Was really good and talented. Yeah. And they did Shy Boy. I think they were originators of that tune that Van Halen or David Lee Roth did later, I think, with Steve Vai. And
Billy, was Billy Sheehan not on that, or who was doing the
bass? Yeah, I think he was at that time with him on the record, I guess, or whatever. But when he was on tour, I don't think it was Sheehan. It was the Bissonette Brothers.
Right.
That's who I saw him with.
You saw David Lee Roth with that group of guys, yeah?
Yeah, when he first went on tour on his own, and it was the Bissonette Brothers, okay. not Sheehan. I think I saw, I want to say I saw Sheehan with somebody else. I can't remember.
I saw him with Steve Vai myself.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
Maybe.
I didn't see Steve Vai, and I'm just thinking of seeing Steve Vai when he was with Roth.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, it's all a big blur now.
Way on.
Tell me about the Psychedelic Shack.
Psychedelic Shack. Okay, now those tunes that I played, the Marvelettes and Barrett Strong, those are tunes that were kind of had historic meaning within the company. And this tune here was just one of my favorite Temptation songs. I mean, there's the staples that they always sing, but this was one of my favorite ones with Psychedelic Shack, just because it was one of their later hits, and it dealt with the hippie movement and doing drugs, and kind of it had kind of a cool guitar sound. I just remember liking this Temptation song more than any of the old classic ones.
Coming to you from the Windsor, Detroit area and podcast worldwide, you're listening to Big JD and Lippo in the Morning.
Psychedelic Shack, that's where it's at, you know.
Okay. I believe you.
The Extreme Heavy Blues of Jeffrey David's Blues Connection welcomes you to an unplugged but in-your-face acoustic session live at the DH, the Dominion House 3140 Sandwich in Windsor, January 1st at 9 p.m. as part of the Psycho Hard Metal Show, including guests Antioch. If you haven't seen Jeffrey David's Blues Connection in an unplugged setting, you're in for a treat as JD and Uncle Joey perform acoustic versions of their recent single releases Killing Floor and Long Cold Lonely Winter, along with other new songs from the upcoming Blues My Way CD, as well renditions of great blues giants such as Willie Dixon, Howlin' Wolf, and B.B. King. Friday, January 1st, 2016, 9 p.m. at the DH 3140 Sandwich in Windsor. You don't want to miss it.
And we're back. Talking about Motown.
Yes.
Anything else you want to mention about the history of the place or It's interesting that neither of us have actually been over to the last vestige of Motown.
Yeah, we mentioned last week that we should actually go there.
We should
take a little trip to Motown.
I would love to.
Guitar Center and Apple Store and not Chipotle. They've been in the news lately. You see that?
Yes.
Chipotle.
You don't want people sick. You don't want any E. coli poisoning?
And not really. No. No.
I wonder if that's all just a setup, but anyway.
Oh, I don't think so.
No.
What?
I just wonder if it's a setup, because just because they were doing so well and they're eating into a lot of fast food chains' profits. Chipotle was?
Oh, yeah, that you think somebody...
Yeah, someone's behind it.
If somebody's behind it, it really happened, though.
Yeah, people actually
are getting sick. If it was just a hearsay thing, it'd be
different. No. Yeah, people are actually getting sick.
Maybe somebody poisoned their food. Detroit, 1959, 1972, early Tamla Motown artists included Mabel John, Eddie Holland, and Mary Wells. Shop Around, the Miracles' first number one R&B hit. It peaked at number two on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1960. Billboard been around for a long time, eh?
Yeah, I'm not sure the history of Billboard. Do you want to do a show on Billboard next week?
Well, maybe. We should be on a Billboard somewhere. Hey, me and you, morning show thing.
How much does that cost?
I don't know. We need to get it for free. Sponsored donation type thing. Anyway, that song was Tamla's first million-selling record. Wow. That's a big deal back then.
Yeah.
Million-selling record.
And that's gold, isn't it? Million-dollar selling record. $1 million in sales is gold. Million records is platinum.
That's crazy. A year later, the Marvelettes scored Tamla's first U.S. number one pop hit, Please Mr. Postman, Please, Mr. the Marvelettes. Postman.
Yeah.
I have more associate that with somebody else. Who did that after, covered it from Motown? Mr. Postman.
The Carpenters.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't believe me?
Sure I do.
Yeah. I sent some punk cover version of...
Yeah, Me First in the Gimme Gimmes.
Okay.
I'll Be There. Now, who did that originally? Was it Jackson's? I'll Be There.
Yeah, that was Jackson. Jackson 5, actually. You and I must make a pact. We must bring salvation back. Where there is love, I'll be there.
Spicing things up on your Sunday morning, right here on Big JD and Lip in the Morning. Yeah. Me First, Nigga Bigamies.
It's the Motown show that we're doing here. Something that's near and dear to my heart, that's for sure. And it's something that I think of as, and not necessarily an anomaly, but it's one of those sounds. You know, there was the Seattle sound, grunge came out of Seattle. And that was that thing. But
killed Wicked Angel.
It killed Wicked. It killed metal. Yeah. Grunge definitely killed the metal scene.
That's okay, though. Like, some of the grunge stuff was pretty cool, so I liked it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A lot of people were really against, you know what I mean? But it was cool hard rock, man. What? 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 Yes, I liked it.
Yes, it was good.
How about Los Angeles, 1972 to 1998 is like the mid, some of...
Yeah, so Barry Gordy moved the Motown records to L.A. And then the reason for that wasn't because there was anything bad going on in Detroit, even though they did have the riots and all that kind of stuff. But it was mostly because they wanted to get their music. This is more business-related decision. He wanted to get more of the Hollywood motion picture. He knew there was a lot of money in that as well. If you can get your music, if you can publish music that's in a movie, you get more money. So every time it's played at a theater, you get money, and there's all that kind of thing. So that was his main motivation for going to Hollywood or to LA was to produce music there. And it seemed like at that point, a lot of music was coming out of LA as far as music that was produced. Have you seen Sound City yet?
Huh?
Sound City?
I watched some of it.
Okay.
It was really cool. Unless I'm thinking of something else.
David Grohl. He narrates it. He produced it.
I'm thinking of maybe Muscle Shoals.
The Muscle Shoals. I haven't seen the Muscle Shoals.
Very cool. Motown had established...
You want to do a show on Muscle Shoals next week? No, we can't do that. We got to do it on a person or a place or something else.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, we have to come up with a
show. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. As we talk,
I'll give you a second to think about that. Yeah. Motown had established branch offices in both New York City and Los Angeles during the mid-1960s, and by 1969 had begun gradually moving more of its operations to Los Angeles. The company moved all of its operations to Los Angeles in June 1972 with a number of artists, among them Martha Reeves, the Four Tops, Gladys Knight and the Pips, and Motown's Funk Brothers studio band. So, cool stuff going on back then.
This is a tune that definitely has that whole Funk Brothers sound, the whole Motown thing. There's a certain amount of reverb, and there's instruments that you don't hear often. It sounds like someone's got a microphone and he's tapping his knee or something.
Yeah. I wonder what this stuff would sound like today, recorded today in a top of the line studio with top of the line gear and equipment in the way that we record today. You know what I mean? Like it would be just like. Wow.
We did see the movie about the Funk Brothers.
Did we?
I did.
What movie?
I want to say it was called Funk Brothers Standing in the Shadows of Love.
I wish I had Standing time in to the see Shadows. All these movies, man.
It's called Standing in the Shadows, yeah.
I'll have to look that up.
Anyway, this is Reach Out, I'll Be There.
All right. And this next song here is one of my favorite bands out of New York, The Rods, doing Rare cover Earth? Song, actually.
Rare Earth was a Motown affiliate
Rare
as well.
Earth, yeah. Yeah. There were some later bands that some people might not associate with Motown that were Motown.
Exactly.
Hey, like Lionel Richie, kind of, Commodores, like that's later on, right?
Yep.
The Rods, You Keep Me Hanging On. David Feinstein and the Rods, and he's actually Dio's cousin.
Mr. Feinstein?
Dio was his cousin, yeah.
Nice Jewish boy, sounds like.
Three-piece band, too, the Rods.
Is cool that why stuff, you like the Rods so much?
Part of the attraction, all part of the attraction.
It's a Hebrew attraction.
I like three-piece band. Speaking of Hebrew, happy Hanukkah to all my Hanukkah friends.
Hanukkah.
It's Hanukkah right now.
Yeah.
So anybody that wants to send gelt to the Big JD and Lippo in the Morning Show, feel free. 111-37653 Detroit, apartment 7. Or call us at 317-963-2679.
People, don't call those numbers, please.
You don't know, you never know what you're going to get.
So what's today, Sunday, as far as Hanukkah goes?
Oh, Sunday.
December.
Yeah, Sunday, probably over.
Is it? Yeah,
and well, I don't know. It started a couple days ago already, so, and it's 8 days. So what do we got? Where are we at? What's going on?
You're asking. What do you call us people? If you're not a Hebrew, you're a
uncircumcised.
That too. Okay, so circumcised or not, you're more a Gentile. That's the word I was looking for. Gentile.
Oh, okay.
Uncircumcised was not the word I'm looking for.
Next week, all Jewish performers.
Yikes. Anyway, what about next week? What are you going to do next
week? What are we doing next week?
I had an idea just from what we were talking
about. Okay,
It was either going to be David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar. Those two, like that, the whole Van Halen separation thing.
What if we open that up to other bands that had the similar thing going on?
Okay.
So there's the David Lee Roth, Sammy Hagar thing. There's the Dio Ozzy thing. Right. There's the Bon Scott...
Brian Johnson
thing. There's the...
There was another one I just had on the tip of my tongue.
What is it?
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
There's got to be lots of them. So the, you know, transitions between...
Deep Purple, you know. I was thinking of.
Huh?
I was thinking of Deep Purple.
Oh, Deep Purple, sure. Yeah, Deep Purple. And that's the three singer thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, how you... what you thought of the transitions between...
Yeah, for
your
sure.
Your favorite bands having multiple singers.
Yep. So anyway... thanks a lot, everybody, for listening to the Motown show.
Yeah,
we had a lot of fun doing it. And here's a song that we already played by another band with, like, many of the tunes here. They've been covered before. This is The Supremes and Get Out My Life. Why don't... No, you keep me hanging on.
You keep me hanging on, yep. The real deal this time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for listening, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.
Big JD and Lippo in the morning. Subscribe to the podcast free in iTunes and don't forget to like the Big JD and Lippo Facebook page.